When it comes to the economy and what's about to happen to not just the U.S. dollar, but the entire global fiat monetary system, you're either well-researched and many of your friends and family think you're crazy, or you're just starting your research and you're not even convinced that there's a major problem yet. I mean, gosh, we've had problems before. Haven't they always gotten through it? This is the video that shows you the truth of where we are from their own data, what brought us here, and the next most likely outcomes, which could absolutely make or break your financial future. Coming up. I'm Lynette Zhang, Chief Market Analyst for ITM Trading. And I have to tell you that I am so grateful to be 68 years old and have lived through everything that I've lived through. Because for those that don't know me, I can just tell you, I have been groomed for this moment in time. Now, everyone wants to be fairly paid for their labor. I mean, of course you do. You don't want to just give it away for nothing. You want to have the ability to accumulate your wealth and have wealth that lasts forever. Well, in the old system, when it was gold-based and silver-based, you could actually do that. Because if a government wanted to tax you or do any other funny stuff, actually having gold in your hand or the ability to convert paper dollars into gold gave you that power. And money was supported by four key pillars. Number one is a tool of accounting for measure, so they know how much they're going to pay you. Also, a tool of barter, so that an economy could specialize. You can have a baker, you can have a farmer, you can have a lawyer, etc. You wanted a short-term store of value to make sure that you were fairly paid for your labor. And then finally, it needed to be a tool of savings for future use, so that no matter when you use this money, you were always fairly paid for the labor that created that. And that's when we had a gold and silver system, monetary system that was based on that. But it's not been tied to gold since 1971. And the reality is central banks have been and are changing the foundation and the definition of money. And you don't even realize it. But when I was researching for this piece, I found out that they had taken away one of the pillars of money. How nice is that? So we went from four functions to three. Just a short-term store of value, a unit of account, and a tool, a medium of exchange, so a tool for barter. Wait a minute. They completely eliminated your ability to save and have the same level of purchasing power in the future. At least this is more honest, which I'm about to show you. But I want you also to understand that what this does is force you to take really unnecessary risks to secure that future and keep pace with the devaluations of the currency and to keep pace with inflation. So let me show you two of the key tools that central banks have. And I'm going to start with purchasing power, because if you asked me and you said, Lynette, you can only have one graph, this would be the graph. This is from the Federal Reserve Education Department, so this is theirs, not mine. And you can see from the original dollar's worth of purchasing power, we've lost a lot. There's the original dollar up there. And when they first came out, you can see this 50% drawdown because the government had given the central bank the ability to create $2.4 for every dollar's worth of gold they held in deep storage. Today, it kind of looks like it trails off here, but it really doesn't. Let me show you. And I'd like you to notice the zero there too. This is a more current chart going from 2008, which is when I believe the system really died and was put on life support, to today. So that's what it's taken to make you kind of seem like they fixed everything, but they didn't. They just printed copious amounts of this. And here's the thing, whenever they do that, the value of what's already out there goes down, and you can see this. So this is all by design, because central banks that create the money position for two things. For governments, this is the inflation, the almost invisible inflation tax that enables the government to tax you because they get the money first without going through legislation. And also, it's what positions income and wealth inequality. And we're going to talk more about that in just a second. But you have to understand that by design, inflation is a key component of fiat money. Fiat means by decree. So it is government-backed money. And what are we told that supports the currency? The full faith and credit of the government. So as long as you trust them, then you will continue to loan them money. So credit and faith. And what's the other tool that they have? Because clearly we have roughly 3 cents left out of the original dollars worth of purchasing power. Well, the tool that they have used to regulate the rate and speed of inflation are interest rates. And these are the Fed funds rates, which is an overnight interest rate. And we're going back to 1971 to 1982, when we were transitioning from a gold-backed currency into a debt-backed currency. So they ratcheted rates all the way up. This is what you hear about with Paul Volcker all the time, how he protected us from inflation. No, he transitioned us into a new system. And then over time, what they've had to do is lower interest rates more and more and more. And supposedly, that has been good for the economy, but we're really what it's done, it's just allowed more and more and more debt, because this is a debt based system. So these gray bars are actually official recessions, which we're not in yet. But you might notice that every time they pushed or even attempted to push interest rates up, a recession followed. So when we talk about the coming recession in 2023, well, you could pretty much count on it. Plus, I've done other videos on yield curve inversions, etc. But let's just stick with this for the moment. Okay, so here's your trend, and you can see it. You know, lower and lower highs. But they got to the point where it was at zero here and at zero there. So, you know, and they tested negative rates. And that didn't really work to stimulate. It didn't do it anyway. And so now what the Federal Reserve is attempting to do, and they did attempt it back here in 2016, and it was a big fat fail, but they're raising rates because now it has become obvious. Up to this point, all this money printing has been held inside of the stock market, the bond market, the real estate market, right? That's where all the inflation has been hiding. Now it's in the regular markets, it's in the grocery store, it's at the gas pump, and you and I, normal people, notice that. And they start to lose confidence in those that are in power, in the central banks and the governments. So this is a big problem for them, because this is all based on credibility. This is a con game, no doubt about it. And you have to believe that they know what they're doing and that they can handle it. And what rapid inflation shows the world is that they can't. But what I would like you to clearly know between this graph, and I'm going back here one more time just so you can see it, and this graph, the real problem is that we are out of purchasing power, so they must now attack your principal, and we are out of the ability to lower interest rates. So that's why we have to reset into a new system. We have to transition away from this paper system into a digital system. That gives the central banks even more control. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But Once we went to a debt-based system, this is definitely what enabled the income and wealth inequality, because inflation allows employers to pay people less and less, even though nominally they're getting paid more. But that also enables greater profits to flow to the top. So when Nixon took us off the gold standard, you can see how productivity and income followed suit until that magic date, 1971, when we went into a new system. That's when that income and wealth transfer really began, and they started shifting a lot of things, risk, et cetera, onto the shoulders of the individuals, the very naive individuals. But Fortune 500 CEOs are paid from double to 5,000 times more than their employees. Back in the 70s, it was typically a 20 to 1. Really, it's good work if you can get it, isn't it? But it is also that ownership equals wealth. Now, what do we know? We know that we're told that in this new system, you will own nothing and you will be happy. I think you'll own nothing if you're not prepared, but I'm pretty sure you won't be happy. But in this transition, they needed to legally own everything. So what you're looking at here is a study that was done by Yale, a custodial ownership chart. Because when you deposit money into your brokerage account, you think that those are your stocks. No. Most likely they are held in street name. I was a new stockbroker in the 80s. I remember the big push to get assets in-house. They paid you to do that so that they could use your equity for their benefit. So here's the legal owner right up here, DTC and Seed and Company. And here's you as the beneficial owner way down here. And everybody in between is also a beneficial owner. That's why nobody went to jail in 2008, because while what they did was disgusting and evil and horrendous and destroyed a lot of people's lives and livelihood, it wasn't illegal. And guess what? It's still not illegal. So street name holders are not technically entitled to vote. They don't really own anything or grant proxy authority. Those rights only reside with DTC as the legal owner of all street name shares. You are not the legal owner, you are the beneficial owner. And DTC registers its shares and company share registers under the name of Seed and Company. Now, who owns DTC and who owns Seed and Company? All these commercial banks and these large financial institutions. So they make up the rules. They certainly have enough money to help pass all the laws, and they get, I don't know, more benefits than you. You take the risk, you pay the fees, they get the benefits because they can legally use your equity for their benefit. That's crazy, is what you're saying to me. Well, unfortunately, it is not crazy at all. It is the way the system is set up. Don't take my word for it. Do your own due diligence. But I would say that it's time to protect yourself as much as possible. Because in 95, the banks needed more money to gamble with, and so they passed Reg D. This is important because it sets up the bail-in that is legal today. Reg D encourages leverage and at risk deposits because it sweeps whatever you deposit into the account into sub accounts in the bank's name. That's what gives them the authority to use your equity for their benefit. And it also is cheaper for them because they don't have to put money on reserve in case you pull those deposits out. See, so it's like a win-win, but it really makes things a lot riskier for depositors, and they don't even realize it. But they call this deposit reclassification. Isn't that nice? And guess how you agreed to it? Well, you just kept using the account, but it definitely diminishes investor protections, and it sets the stage for bail-ins. So what's the bail-in? Well, you know, this was tested back in 2013 in Cyprus. And then, and I'm going to show you that in a second, but then the Bank for International Settlements, which is the central banker's central bank, came in and formalized and gave the world a template on what this would look like. And what I think is interesting is that the first bar chart shows with no insured deposits. So in Cyprus, they just took everybody's money, period. And then the whole world went, oh, wait, what about deposit insurance? What about deposit insurance? So then they backed off and they honored that, although people still had no access to their funds for a number of years after they did the bail-in. And if you had money in there and they bailed it in, you were not getting it back. Just that simple. So let me show you what that looked like. This is the May 3rd, 2013 test, because they needed to see how people would react. So they run these tests way over there. So you could go, why are you talking to me about this, Lynette? That's in Cyprus. I live in America. That could never happen here. Well, it's legal if it happens here. And they needed to see what people would do. But what I want to show you in this that I think is so interesting, this red line are domestic deposits. So that would be like you and me depositing into our account. This black line were German and French banks. And you can see that when Cyprus became part of the EU, they had higher interest rates. So your German and French banks made lots and lots of deposits into mid-2010. But these bail-in things, these plans, they don't just happen on the fly. So isn't it quite interesting that while domestic deposits stayed very stable, all of a sudden, German and French banks got the Hades out of Dodge. Then there was a bail-in. Is that a coincidence? I'll let you decide. Personally, I don't think it's a coincidence, but you can decide. These are just the facts. You get to formulate your own opinion. So they've run this test, and it's based on eminent domain laws, because, you know, the government can take anything they want as long as they pay you fairly for it. Well, what these depositors end up with were shares in failing institutions. Who decided how much those were worth? Maybe the failing institutions. And what are you going to do with shares in a failing institution anyway? I mean, really. But hey, eminent domain law satisfied, bail-in complete, too bad, so sad, nothing you can do about it. And by the way, CDs and bonds were also converted into shares of stock in the failing institution. So I get a lot of people that ask me, well, what about CDs? What about bank bonds? Well, there you go. Now, a lot of the problems that created the speculative derivative problems that created what happened in 2008, well, they haven't gone away. They've just been papered over and they're just floating out there. But as you can see from this graph from the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency that tracks derivatives in the FDIC insured U.S. bank deposits or depositories, the level of derivatives are much higher today than they were in 2007, 2008. And much of it is still kind of similar to the derivatives that were created before that. As long as you keep paying the fees, they don't have to settle. However, banks generate a huge chunk of their revenue by trading these derivative contracts with your deposits, even though you don't know it because you don't see it. Doesn't matter. Insured U.S. commercial banks and savings associations reported trading revenue of $12.7 billion in the third quarter of 2022. That is $2.4 billion more, or 22.9%. So they love this volatility because it enables them to make a whole lot more money and also maybe some losses, but almost 23% greater than the previous quarter, or 84.1% higher than a year earlier. That's significant, don't you think? Because I sure do. I mean, they made 84.1% more than a year earlier. That's crazy. And this is all based on the derivatives in the FDIC insured banks. So there's far more that are speculative than our end user. This is your trading revenue right up here, the speculation. Derivative notional amounts in the third quarter of 2022 was 195.1 trillion. 142 trillion are in interest rate derivatives. Now, remember, a derivative is just a big leveraged bet. It's not like they can convert anything into the underlying. So with most derivative contracts concentrated in interest rates, when the central bank was using their forward guidance to tell you, in other words, telling Wall Street, this is what we're going to do, so they could get into position to benefit from it. It hurts you, but it benefits them, because it should be pretty clear that banks are too big to fail. You and I, we're the right sizes, but the banks are not. So 72.8 of total notional value derivatives are in interest rate related products. And we can see the battle on interest rates that are happening in the markets right now and what's happening with bonds. What's going to happen next? I don't know. We'll find out though, won't we? Because this gives you a relative image of the size of the real problem with derivatives. These are all derivatives. These are bank assets, a lot smaller than these two shores. And derivatives are big leverage bets that Warren Buffett called financial weapons of mass destruction. We've experienced that twice. 1998 with long-term capital management that was doing derivatives against government bonds, the safest things you can do. And it almost blew up the global system. We had to go in and bail them out, Wall Street and the banks, etc. So that you didn't even know that it happened. But I'm telling you right now, it absolutely did indeed happen. And again, in 2007 and 2008. So I really do, if you can look at it, you can see that, you know, if these are assets and these are like football fields and tennis courts, et cetera, to give you an idea of the size, and then you look at, you know, the derivatives, yeah, that can topple the system. And by the way, all of these derivatives have to shift by June 30th of this year. No one really knows the true value at risk because all of their accounting tricks, et cetera, actually hide it. And central banks, they're committed to raising rates and push the global economy into, you know, do you think this is going to be just not a big deal and short-lived? No, this is a very big deal. And central banks are most likely to be making huge policy mistakes because they're between a rock and a hard place. At this point, it really doesn't matter what they do. And even though they want us to believe, well, all central banks have to do is turn around and lower interest rates and start printing like crazy again, and we'll be out of a recession. Yeah, it doesn't really work quite that easy. I think this next one is going to send us into a hyperinflationary depression. Maybe I'm wrong, but there is no doubt in my mind. I believe governments have a plan. And this plan is based on transitioning us into a new fiat money system. But this is even more dangerous than this one. Because if you, we were on the gold standard, if you didn't like what the government did, you simply went in and converted this into this, and that created restrictions. When you're holding this, it does not preserve your purchasing power, as we've seen, but it does preserve your principal. Once they get us off of this, well, then your principal, they can attack it. So 1996, the NSA, which is a government agency, did this white paper on how to make a mint with cryptography. And if you look at all of the different aspects of it, boy, it sure does look like like Bitcoin, doesn't it? Yes, it actually does. And so I don't personally think that it is a coincidence that Bitcoin came out in January of 2009 and quantitative easing started in March. They needed to paper over the problem and get in a position so that they could transition us from a paper debt-based system into a digital, maybe transaction-based system. That does not put your best interest first. Do you think it's a coincidence? Only you can answer that. And I know that a lot of people think that, or thought that anyway, before the crypto winter, that, you know, cryptocurrencies were all the best, and boy, they were decentralized, they were outside of the system, and that would save us. Well, you know, what they know is they need to keep things as close to normal as possible. And the latest count that I saw, we've had adoption in this country of 16% of American adults have on some level dealt with cryptocurrencies. That's enough adoption to start to execute the next part of their plan, which is to go do digital. This is from the Bank for International Settlements, the central bank, and they're talking about the future of the monetary system. And what they're really looking to do is execute policy and modify rates instantaneously so that the Fed could have its little finger on the button constantly. And hey, we're a consumer-driven economy. If you are not doing what we want you to do, we just push interest rates lower, attack your principal harder and faster and more visibly for you to see it. And then what are you likely to do? You're likely to take that out of the system and frankly, put it into anything else that is likely to be more stable. So I don't know about you, but do you feel good about the central bankers having their finger on that button and constantly tweaking it? You wouldn't know what in the world is going on. What's up? That is way too much control, because look what a great job they've done so far. I'm being completely facetious. They want us to believe that private cryptos are bad. And hey, look at what's going on with FTX and Coinbase and all of these. Those are not the cryptocurrencies. Those are the exchanges. So they're not really so decentralized and all the thievery. But yeah, they want to be the only ones that can steal your wealth. They don't want anybody else to. Central bank digital currencies are good, and the way they're going to sell it, so you heard it here, write it down, you'll see, because this is what they said. Now, maybe they won't, but this is what they said. If you allow them to control the currency, there will be no more inflation. So we have to have really, really, really bad inflation, much worse than what we've experienced so far, for you to go, save me, Mr. Bill, save me, and accept the next round of garbage that they want to stuff down our throats. Because really what they want is they want to collapse the system, transition into a new one, and stay in power. No. You know how you avoid that? Here you go. Gold and silver, physical, in your possession, outside of the system. According to the Bank for International Settlements, it runs zero counterparty risk. Everything else is all counterparty risk. So here they talk about the electronic money standard. So we go away from the paper standard, just like we went away from the gold, silver, and silver standard to a paper standard. Now they want electronic money standard. The lower zero bound arises. So how low can you go? Zero. Because this is actually a Federal Reserve note that does not pay interest. So this establishes zero interest rate. Because if you saw negative rates, you could go to, and they were experimenting with it, you know that. You could go to the bank and pull these out and preserve your principal, not your purchasing power. Forget that. That's gone already anyway, but preserve your principal. So that's what the lower zero bound arises. When a government issues pieces of paper or coins guaranteeing a zero nominal interest rate over all time horizons, no matter how long you hold on to this cash, you still have $100 bill. Now, it buys you a whole lot less, but it locks in that zero lower bound. But don't worry, because there is now a growing body of work developing mechanisms to expand the central bank's toolkit to overcome the zero lower bound. Take us into negative rates is what they're talking about. Its elimination opens the possibility of a zero inflation target. They're telling you, hey, you let us control everything, you'll have no inflation. No, you'll have deflation because they're going to rob you of all your principal and you're going to wake up in the streets with nothing, nothing. All they have to do is eliminate the arbitrage opportunity between cash that guarantees a zero nominal interest rate and money in the bank that would earn negative interest rates. So the new money coming out will have a chip in it so that if you then withdraw that money, whenever you go to redeposit it or you go to spend it, the technology will read, well, that's not really $100, that's 80. Or based upon the interest rates at the bank. So that's what they're gearing up to. And by the way, what they also say, and I have searched and searched and searched, what is going to justify the creation of this money? Now, this money is created by debt. And originally, I mean, it was hard to ferret that out to begin with. And they did say it would be debt-based. But now they're talking about it being transaction-based. So, oh, I want to go buy a boat. All right, well, no problem. Here's the money for the boat. Oh, I want to buy a house. No problem. Here, we'll create the money for the house. You tell me how much value a currency that's created from at will, from nothing, is going to have. Nothing. They are crashing everything. Everybody thinks that they want to postpone, but I think they just needed to postpone it long enough to get the new system in place. I mean, that's what we're seeing. So as a reminder, what are the original functions of money? Tool of accounting, a tool of barter for trading, a tool of savings for future use, a store of value for fair payment of labor, no matter when you use it. That is what money was originally. We already know that only gold fulfills the original four functions of money. It is classified as good money. It is why central banks have been accumulating it like crazy. So let's just kind of make this comparison. This is commodity money. It takes labor and energy to pull it out of the ground. In commodity money, your control. You didn't like what the government was doing? You took this in and you walked out of the bank with that. No, 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 we can't have that happen. They took that ability away from us in 33. But it's also private. You hold it. You own it outright. It runs no counterparty risk. It is decentralized. It is virtually invisible. Now we went to the Federal Reserve note. A note is a debt instrument. It is under their control, right? So the Fed puts out these policies, but they don't know. It takes normally about 18 or on average about 18 months running through the system to know if they got what they intended. But if you hold this cash outside of the system, it's still at this moment anyway, it is still private. Wait till they put the chips in it. This, by the way, is called cash in the wild. So cash in the wild that does not have those chips in it. Or moving us on to the CBDCs. That is programmable fiat money. Who knows what it's really going to be based on yet? I keep looking. I'll let you know when I know. But it is under their control and you have no privacy. So you look at China and you see the social scoring and what are you going to sit there and go, oh, well, we would never do that here. Are you kidding me? Of course we will do that here. That is what they're gearing up to. And you have a choice. Now, whether or not you execute the choice is entirely up to you. I know what I've done for my choice. because the CBDCs will ultimately reduce money's function down to two that is fully and instantly controlled by the central banks. Two, you say? Only two? Yes, because as soon as you get paid, that money hits your account. It's all electronic. And as soon as it hits your bank account with those negative rates, guess what? You're not even being paid fairly for the paycheck that you just got because it's losing principal value. It already has no purchasing power. It only has any value because we agree to work for it. We agree to try and save it. We agree to use it as our tool of barter. Is that okay with you? Because I got to tell you, it's not okay with me. It's just a tool of measure and a tool of barter, nothing else. So what am I working for? I can tell you, when I get extra, I convert it. I convert it as quickly as I can because there is no doubt in my mind, I've studied this like on some level my entire life. This is the end of this currency's life cycle. I showed you we're out of purchasing power and they're out of tools. Central banks are out of tools. So just on a reminder, what share for gold? This is from the Bank for International Settlements. Gold bullion is the only case of a financial asset with no counterparty liability. This is collectible gold. So this also has no counterparty liability, but gold has no counterparty liability. Gold kept at home is not subject to political manipulation. Now, they can manipulate through the spot market, through the contract market on Wall Street. They can create as much gold and silver that does not nor ever will exist. Having said that, though, that's your perception management. Don't buy gold. Don't do it. Don't do it. We're going to make it volatile. And yet it outperformed almost. I think oil performed a little bit better and the dollar performed a little bit better. It is most widely recognized feature is its potential value in highly adverse scenarios. And it is empirically proven to serve as an inflation hedge, at least over longer periods of time, because they can do any manipulation. So what do you want going into this battle? And isn't that really why central banks have been accumulating gold? So that, because what they know is whoever holds the gold holds the power. This, what you're looking at, is the central bank's buyers of gold, right? From back in 1971 through 2021. When I get the 2022 numbers, we will update this graph. But it should be pretty obvious. Here's 2005, right? So central banks, global central banks began to really accumulate gold again in 2005, which was 2-3 years before the great financial crisis. Do you think they might know something that you don't? A little bit. Maybe that's why they're buying gold. Through the third quarter of 2022, because we don't have the fourth quarter numbers yet, but central banks had bought more gold than ever before, at least since they started tracking it, at least since 1967, because this goes back to 1971. Don't you think that's kind of interesting? Don't you think that you might want to do what the smartest guys in the room on money and what they're doing to destroy it is? So we're out of purchasing power and central banks are out of tools. They got to reset us into a new system. If you go in with this, then you're going to be in a much better position. Because if you go in with this, this is a hyperinflationary fire that enables these governments to pay off debt with dollars that have no value. So if you haven't already, if you're new to this channel, just hit that subscribe button below and the little bell will let you know when we're going on. And also, if you don't have a strategy, since it should be pretty clear that central banks and governments do, click that Calendly link below. set up a time to talk to one of our consultants and get your own personalized strategy together and then get it executed. If you like this, please give us a thumbs up. Make sure you leave a comment. All those things help distribute this information wider and wider because we want as many people as possible to understand this so that you can actually make choices that, I don't know, put your best interest first. What a concept. And until next we meet, please be safe out there. Bye-bye.